As I mentioned just a few minutes ago during the children's time, we, Elise and I, spent a few days out further north enjoying some wonderful weather and spent one day out on the waters on one of those cruise boats that goes around and does a tour of the bay and the area. And we saw puffins, as I mentioned, saw eagles, saw sea otters, some porpoises, cormorants, sea lions. Well, it was just a wonderful time. And I just want to... It was interesting that, again, these puffins who live out in the open sea, but who have to come to land in order to lay their eggs. And puffins make their nests in the large, steep cliffs. They find these nooks and crannies in which to lay their eggs. Rather precarious, you would think, but that's where they make their nests. On the other hand, bald eagles, as we all know, they find the tall trees. And they build their nests out of branches, out of twigs, and they make this large nest in which they lay their eggs. Well, why do birds make nests? Well, so they can lay their eggs, and so that they would have a place for their hatchlings, their offspring, to grow up. Now, nests are protection from threats, from predators. The birds try to find places that are safe, places that are secure as much as possible. And so these puffins make their nests in places that are very hard to get to. Other predators will have a difficult time. Eagles, they go to the top of trees. Very difficult for other predators to climb up or to come down onto them. So nests are built for security. So it's shelter, security, a place for the young to grow into maturity and in safety. And that's kind of where I want to go with the parable of the mustard seed that I just read for the New Testament lesson. I'd like to read it again. With what can we compare the kingdom of God, or what parable shall we use for it? It is like a grain of mustard seed, which when sown on the ground is the smallest of all the seeds on earth. Yet when it is sown, it grows up and becomes larger than all the garden plants and puts out large branches so that the birds of the air can make nests in its shade. When I think of a mustard plant, I think of something fairly small. Kind of more like a weed, those little yellow flowers that one sees most frequently in the lower 48. And I remember growing up in California where every spring you have these kind of waist-high or shoulder-high plants, wild mustard plants. So when I read this parable, there's this kind of dissonance. I mean, it's talking about a tree, a mustard tree and a mustard plant. What's the difference? Well, in the arid areas of the world, like the Middle East, Africa, there is a cousin of what we know as the mustard plant. The scientific name is Salvadora persica. And it belongs to the same, like the genus or something, related to the broccoli, the cabbage, all of that. But it's an evergreen shrub that can appear as a small tree. I looked at some pictures, and indeed they do look like trees. They have trunks like so big, and it's like a tree. And it can grow up as high as 20 feet. It's a huge plant. It has very dense branches and very dense foliage, often low to the ground, sometimes touching the ground, so that... it makes sense now that birds would make their nests in these branches, in these trees, because it provides shelter, it provides safety. It hides the nest. It's a place of security for these birds as they lay their eggs. The hatchlings come out of the eggs and grow to maturity. It's out of sight of predators and it's difficult to access. And so Jesus in this parable pictures the kingdom of God like this tree. A place of safety, a place of security, a place of shelter that He provides. A place of peace. Well, what is peace? How do you define peace? Switching gears a little bit here, how do you define darkness? Well, darkness is the absence of light. No, light is not the absence of darkness. Let's think about that. Whenever a light shines, darkness disappears. But you can't place darkness into light and try to extinguish the light, because you can do no such thing. Same thing with sound versus silence. Well, silence is the absence of sound. Wherever there is sound, there's sound. You know, you can't introduce silence into a noisy environment. You have to get rid of the sound. So, back to peace. Is peace the absence of conflict? Or is conflict the absence of peace? The word peace, as it is frequently found in the Bible, comes from the Hebrew word shalom. And for the Hebrews, shalom is far more than simply an absence of conflict. For the Hebrews, when they hear the word shalom, when they hear peace, to them it means a perfect harmony of relationships. The relationship between humans to God, relationships among people, relationship between people and creation, and relationship between created things. In other words, shalom is how God originally intended the universe to function. So my suggestion to you is that the opposite of peace is not conflict. But it is fear. See, it's fear that causes conflict. Conflict is a result of the absence of peace. When peace is taken away, the natural result is peace. When people operate under influence of fear, conflict results. When people are in perfect harmony with one another, there is peace. And when there is peace, there is no conflict. On the other hand, take away the peace, and something has to replace it, and that's conflict. Following the parable of the mustard seed, in the Gospel of Mark, Mark relates two incidents in Jesus' life. The first is when Jesus goes out into a boat with his disciples and experiences a storm. And so I want to read that incident, that story, found in Mark chapter 4, verses 35 through 41. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, speaking of Jesus, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" The story, the storm comes up and the disciples are afraid that they are going to die. They have a fear of death. Jesus' response to that, to their pleadings, is to rebuke the storm. And it's interesting that it is only in the Gospel of Mark that is recorded what Jesus actually said. And the words were, "Peace, be still." It's about peace. Peace. Shalom. And the result is there was a great calm. And it's this phrase has a very active sense to it. It's not simply that the storm suddenly went away, but rather this peace actively drove away the storm. A great calm arose. So peace is being pictured as a very active presence in the world. Rather than simply the absence of a storm, it's an active presence where the storm cannot exist. And Jesus' rebuke to his disciples was, "Why do you fear? Why do you fear?" It's interesting, though, that what Mark relates here is that Jesus introduces peace into the natural order of things, but that in turn causes his disciples to become afraid, to experience fear of a different sort. Who is this? Who is this? Remember, this is still early in Jesus' ministry, and the disciples really don't know who Jesus is. He's a great prophet, it seems like, a great rabbi, but is he more than that? The Jews attributed natural forces such as storms to either angels or demons or some supernatural source. Jesus commanding the storm implies that Jesus is greater than angels and demons. And that means only one thing. That can only mean one thing, that he must be God. And there's a certain fear then that comes into the disciples because whenever people experience God in person, seems like, especially in the Old Testament, there's fear. The disciples are wondering, what's going on here? The next story immediately following is about Jesus healing a man with a demon. It's Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. So after the storm, they came to the other side of the sea, the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs. And no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains. But he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him, and crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me." For he, Jesus, was saying to him, the person with the unclean spirit, the man with the unclean spirit, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." So Jesus was approaching the man already before the man and Jesus had met. Jesus was commanding the spirit, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" He replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, "Send us to the pigs, let us enter them." So he gave them permission. And the unclean spirits came out and into the pigs and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down to the steep bank into the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told it in the city and in the country, and people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs, and they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. The story of disciples in the boat in the storm, and now the story of the man with the unclean spirit. There's similarities. In the first story, there's a physical storm. In the second story, there's a storm that's going on, raging within a person. In both cases, the original audience would have attributed both of those causes to some sort of supernatural force, to demons, to unclean spirits. It's interesting that, you know, in the midst of the physical storm, Jesus is sleeping in a boat. But this man with the unclean spirit, day and night, he is unable to sleep. He is tormented day and night. He is crying out for relief. This man lives among the tombs, among the dead. And I think what Mark is trying to portray here is that this man, in effect, represents all who are spiritually dead, which means every single person before they come to Christ. So for the disciples, their fear was that of perishing. But you know, for this man with the unclean spirit, as far as society is concerned, he is already dead. So this idea of death is a theme that crosses across both of these stories. It's ironic that what this man, tormented man, fears is what Jesus is going to do to him. So he fears that something bad is, something even worse is going to happen if Jesus is allowed to have his way with him. Yet there's a part of him, as it's described here, that wants relief. And he senses that Jesus can offer that. And so he falls down. Even though his mouth says otherwise, his heart begs Jesus for relief. And Jesus responds to the heart. The sea, in ancient times, represents the abyss. It's the place of the dead. And so, when Jesus sends out the unclean spirits into the pigs, who then go into the sea and drown, it portrays a picture of Jesus sending death back to its home. When Jesus comes, death has to flee. Death returns to where it belongs. Jesus brings peace. Jesus brings life. And peace and life cannot coexist with death. Peace brings life, and life drives out death. And when that happens, this man returns to his right mind. The turmoil, the conflict within himself is removed, and harmony returns. as in the story of the disciples in the storm, when Jesus' peace arrives, the initial reaction is fear. Because the world fears genuine peace. In its sinful state, the world cannot understand peace. And so peace the reaction to peace that natural humankind has is fear. But what Jesus does with this man whose unclean spirit is removed is instead of saying, yeah, come with me. No, I can teach you more. No, he says, go back to your family. Go back to your family. Go back to your friends. Go back to your home. Go back to your town and tell them the peace that has come to you. Tell them about it. Show them. And when he does, all who hear marvel at what has happened. And although it is not explicit in Scripture, Mark mentions Decapolis one more time, a few chapters on. And it appears that some positive influence has been had from this man telling about his experience, because when Jesus revisits the area again, people come to him. They want to be healed. They have come to understand what genuine peace is, and they have come to want that. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 15 through 18, it reads, whoever confesses that Jesus is the Son of God, God abides in him and he in God. So we have come to know and to believe the love that God has for us. God is love, and whoever abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. By this is love perfected with us, so that we may have confidence for the day of judgment, because as he is, so also are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. We love because he first loved us. This passage talks about abiding in Jesus. And I relate that to kind of going back to the very first passage that we read about the mustard tree and how the birds nest. So it's kind of like a nesting of sheltering in Jesus. Now, when we do that, when we abide in Jesus, we have confidence, we have peace, because Jesus casts out the fear that we have and brings us peace. The author of Hebrews in chapter 2, verses 14 and 15 wrote, since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, he, speaking of Jesus himself, likewise partook of the same things, that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. Fear of death is the one universal fear. And all nations, all peoples, all cultures fear death. But what the author of Hebrews writes is that through his death, Jesus conquered death itself, so that those who believe in him, those who trust him, those who shelter and abide in him, have nothing to fear, because the ultimate fear has been destroyed. And that's why in Isaiah 9:6, Jesus can be called the Prince of Peace. He brings genuine peace, the perfect harmony that God intends for each one of us and that we in our hearts long for. And so, what is your fear? What's your fear today? What are you afraid of? Is there anything that you fear? The answer to your fears is Jesus. He offers the shelter, the mustard tree, in which we can rest. It's the Prince of Peace. Jesus will drive out, will cast out whatever fear you may have. When we experience fear, we have one of two responses. We can either let fear control us, or we can take the fear to Jesus. And so, my prayer for you, for us today, is that whenever we experience fear, instead of letting fear take control of us, let's take it to Jesus. Let's find shelter in Him. Let's let Jesus cast out the fear that robs us of our peace, because perfect love casts out fear.